Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, September 21st, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. 20-year-old was in critical condition after three-story fall from fraternity fire escape in Pullman. New photos of man purchasing wig and beard disguise linked to Moscow bank robbery. Group plans flotilla to call for lower Snake River dam removal. And Idaho Legislative Interim Committee critiques urban renewal district system. Well, details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A 20-year-old Washington State University student was in critical condition after he fell three stories from a fraternity fire escape Saturday night. Police spokesperson Commander Chris Tennant told the Spokesman Review website Pullman police were called to Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity at 610 Northeast Colorado Street in Pullman after someone found the man with serious head injuries at around 10 p.m. Tennant said there was vomit on the man's body and that he was highly intoxicated at the time of the fall. He said apparently nobody saw the man fall and speculated he may have been trying to vomit off the fire escape when he fell. Sigma Phi Epsilon chapter president Ryan Pitzer said in a statement members of his fraternity found the man on the ground. Pitzer also wrote the chapter is alcohol-free and was not hosting a social event Saturday night. Tennant did not release the name of the injured man, but said he is from Poolsbo, Washington. It's the second apparent alcohol-related fall on WSU's Greek Row this semester. A 19-year-old woman fell to the ground from a second-story window at the Delta Gamma sorority last month as she tried to vomit out a window. A 21-year-old man, who was reportedly drunk, fell down a flight of stairs at the Delta Chi fraternity in September 2013. Rather, that's the Delta Chi fraternity. There were five serious falls from buildings at universities on the Palouse in 2012. Four of the falls that year happened at University of Idaho or Washington State University Greek houses, and four out of five of them involved alcohol. Moscow police have published a photo of a man purchasing a combination wig and beard at the Pullman Walmart Friday morning. The same day, a wig and beard disguise was used in a bank robbery at the East Side Wells Fargo branch in Moscow. A Moscow police press release says the silver sedan used by the robber to leave the scene was a late model Toyota, possibly a Camry or Avalon. In the two surveillance photos, the man is shown at the Walmart wearing white pants and a gray collarless shirt with three thin horizontal stripes in different shades of gray across the top of the chest. He's also wearing what appears to be a black stocking cap and sunglasses. He is somewhat heavy set and has black facial hair in the form of a thin partial beard and mustache. The Moscow police are asking anyone with information about the man or the robbery to call the tip line at 208-892-3898. That number again, 208-892-3898. State investigators say Washington Anti-Tax Initiative promoter Tim Iman may have illegally spent $170,000 in campaign funds, using the money for personal uses. The Washington Public Disclosure Commission has recommended referring the case to the Attorney General's office. The Tacoma News Tribune reports at least $182,000 Iman raised in support of Initiative 1185 was illegally used to support another statewide ballot initiative. Initiative 1185 was on the 2012 ballot, and it was passed by voters requiring the legislature to vote by a two-thirds supermajority to raise taxes. The state Supreme Court found the initiative unconstitutional after it passed. Iman's Initiative 1185 group paid signature gathering company Citizen Solutions $1.1 million to help put the measure on the ballot. The News Tribune reported $308,000 of that money was paid by the company to a company formed by Iman. The paper reported Iman told the Public Disclosure Commission he used some of the money to support his family, and $182,000 of it was used to put Initiative 517 on the 2013 ballot. That initiative would have given campaigns more time to collect signatures for future initiatives and would have implemented protections for signature gatherers. Voters rejected Initiative 517. An interim legislative committee questioned a Caldwell Urban Renewal Agency official today and planned to meet again next month before making any recommendations to the legislature for changes in urban renewal laws. At the meeting in Boise, Caldwell Urban Renewal Agency Chair L.J. Waite said the agency has provided incentive grants of up to $200,000 to spur investment in the district to create jobs. The Associated Press reported Republican Senator Jeff Sidaway of Territon said it sounded like the Caldwell district is skirting the law by using tax money to subsidize private investments. Waite said the Caldwell city attorney reviewed the program and found no legal problems. Committee member and Republican Representative Kathleen Sims of Coeur d'Alene said 100 people came to a town hall meeting she hosted in her home district to talk about City of Coeur d'Alene urban renewal efforts. Sims said people at the meeting wanted more transparency and were concerned the urban renewal agency there was issuing grants to businesses with no oversight. State law currently allows urban renewal districts to collect tax revenue from any increase in property value within the district and spend that on development within the district, such as public infrastructure. The rest of the property taxes collected would still go to the overarching taxing districts, such as the city, county, and school district. Urban renewal districts are allowed to exist for a set number of years in Idaho, usually about 20. State law allows city officials to appoint urban renewal agency board members rather than putting the positions up for election. Supporters of urban renewal districts say since the Idaho legislature does not allow local governments to impose sales taxes except in tourism communities, urban renewal districts are a key tool for funding public infrastructure and to spur development. The AP reported nobody at the interim committee meeting today spoke in favor of completely eliminating the urban renewal district system in the state, in part because there have been numerous success stories where the districts created jobs and spurred local economies around the state. Critics say urban renewal districts should not be used for private property upgrades. They also say sometimes urban renewal district tax revenue is used to subsidize development that would have been built anyway. The Moscow City Council this month voted to continue the process of closing one of the city's two urban renewal districts a year early. On September 8th, the council voted to end the life of the Alturas Research and Technology Park revenue allocation area after 19 years and return much of the remaining property tax revenue collected on the increased values to the county, city, school district, and other taxing districts. The Alturas District is located south of State Highway 8 on the east side of the city. The Urban Renewal Agency is expected to return $760,000 to the taxing districts, with another $140,000 in tax revenue staying with the district for upkeep of unsold lots and closing expenses. Moscow's other urban renewal district is the newer Legacy Crossing District, which is centered around a swath of undeveloped land south of 6th Street between the University of Idaho campus and downtown. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys is expected to give Assotin County Prosecutor Ben Nichols permission to charge underage people caught with pot with misdemeanors rather than felonies. Nichols had told the Lewiston Tribune earlier a new state law forced him to charge minors in possession of cannabis with felonies. He said Friday, "What I'm being told is I can still charge juveniles, even after the law change, with misdemeanor possession. I was in a situation where I was painted into a corner." Nichols had originally charged three Assotin County juveniles caught with marijuana at school with felonies, but he says he will reduce the charges to misdemeanors once he hears from the Prosecuting Attorneys Association. The three Assotin County teens charged with felony possession are 14, 15, and 17 years old. The issue seems to be unclear language in the Washington Cannabis Patient Protection Act, passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Jay Inslee this summer. Bill sponsor, Republican Senator Ann Rivers of La Center, said last week the bill was intended to make charging minors who possess cannabis a felony and send a message to kids that legalized recreational marijuana is an adult activity. The Tribune reported American Civil Liberties Union of Washington Policy Director Mark Cook said he was pleased Prosecutor Nichols will reduce the charges. Cook said, "We also have significant questions about whether this new felony exists at all, since that was not the intent of the legislation." In Whitman County Superior Court, 25-year-old Charles Becker of Pullman pled not guilty Friday to a second-degree manslaughter charge. Investigators say Becker was criminally negligent when he let his infant son fall out of bed and choke on a plastic garment bag. Becker is represented by public defender Steve Martonic of Pullman. His trial is scheduled for December 14th. Second-degree manslaughter is a Class B felony with a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison and a $20,000 fine. Doors to the seven-story-high Zen staircase at the Fine Arts Building parking garage near the Compton Union Building on the Washington State University campus have been locked, and construction zone signs have been put in place in preparation of a paint-over of the decades-old layers of graffiti in the stairway. WSU Museum of Art worker Victoria De Leon, who considers the colorful stairway a form of public participation art, is against the university's plans to paint over the staircase. De Leon told the Daily News, "It was one of the things my brother first brought me to on campus. My mom came too. We were both astounded by the color." She said the Zen staircase is, quote, "a way for residents and students to vent, especially in a society where most graffiti is looked down upon." WSU Assistant Police Chief Steve Hansen told the paper he is in favor of painting over the stairwell. Hansen said some of the more artistic graffiti has been overlaid with tags and slurs. He said, "It's always been a place where people hang out, drink, smoke dope. It's not a safe environment for anyone to be in." The paper also quoted WSU Fine Arts Department Chair Tom Brown, who is also a painting and drawing professor, who said, "It has never been a popular thing in the department. I'm surprised that WSU allowed it." Brown said university police have found used condoms, feces, and students taking naps in the Zen staircase on occasion. He also said some of the paintings on the walls are offensive to women and other campus groups. A kayak, canoe, and rowboat flotilla calling for the removal of the four lower Snake River dams in southeastern Washington will be held Saturday, October 3rd at Lower Granite Dam. Brett Haverstick of Friends of the Clearwater is organizing the flotilla, which will launch October 3rd at 10 a.m. I spoke to Haverstick at this week's Saturday Farmers Market in downtown Moscow. Brett Haverstick, Friends of the Clearwater, is with me at Moscow Farmers Market. And are you tabling, or you aren't tabling, you're just standing around, right?
Kind of a hybrid today, tabling and roving around and recruiting people for 2 weeks from today is the Free the Snake Flotilla and River Recreation Day. And it's going to be down at Wawai Canyon on the Snake River.
You got to bring your own kayak?
Yeah, we're encouraging people to bring their own boat. If they don't have one, they can rent one. The website is www.freethesnake.com. If you live in Moscow, you can rent boats from the University of Idaho. If you're in Pullman, you can rent them from Washington State University. And there's a couple other locations like Tri-State where you can rent boats as well.
Free the Snake. That sounds like something Jim Morrison would say in a creepy voice while doing poetry at a concert.
Yes. And while I am a fan of Jim, I hope we're not ripping anything off here. But... But Free the Snake, yeah, it's a nice catchy term. And Patagonia is sending in a videographer to be at the event. And the filmmaker of the event, Damnation, is going to be at the event as well. So we kind of worked with them to come up with this name, Free the Snake.
Okay. The Damnation guy, is he going to be filming?
It's a lot of fun to do this.
I don't know if Matt Stecker is himself, but Patagonia is bringing in a supplemental videographer. And so there is going to be some live video being shot down there, and hopefully a future video coming out of it.
Okay, so if people want to just meet up and they've got their boat and everything's arranged, what are the directions to get to the Wawawi landing to put forth your boats from the edge of the snake?
So I don't have the directions memorized because there are some rural roads just south of Pullman. The Free the Snake website has a Google map, interactive Google map, plus written out directions of how to get down there. It's approximately a 30-minute drive from Moscow, 20 minutes from Pullman. We're meeting at 8 a.m. at Wawai Landing with coffee and breakfast. At 10 a.m. we'll actually do the launch. And we're also interested, if people are looking to carpool, get in touch with us through the Free the Snake website, and then you won't even have to worry about directions. You can just catch a ride.
Okay. Although, from what I recall, getting down there involves you drive from Moscow to Pullman and you're on Main Street, and instead of turning right or left on Grand, you just go up the hill past the Gladish, and then there may be some signs there for the Wawawi Road, I think.
You're correct. There's a couple different ways to get down there. The key road is Wawai Road.
Wawawi.
Thank you. It's a tough one to pronounce.
W-A-W-A-W-A-I. Any origin of that word, do you know?
Good question. You know, I do want to, I wish I knew that answer, and well, I should find that out.
Now, freeing the snake, getting rid of the four lower Snake River dams, lately it's been talked about more and more that this is something that will help our ocean life. The orcas, I mean, yeah, we got to stop polluting the oceans and dumping Fukushimas in there, but aside from that, orcas need salmon.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating ecological relationship or concept there. Make a long story short, the southern resident orca pods, 80% of their diet is fall Chinook. And with the dams killing salmon by the millions, the orcas are starving. and they're missing their main food source. So yes, the science says that removing these lower four Snake River dams, not only will it increase maybe future sediment loads to the future one day, but also deliver an important food source for species like orcas.
Okay, Saturday, October 3rd, meet at 8 a.m. at Wawawi County Park. We're with Brett Haverstick, Friends of the Clearwater, organizing a protest flotilla. And, it's the fall Chinook salmon that we're crashing this year, that run, particular run, right?
A lot of the runs have been crashing over the years. It was the big wild sockeye run. When I say wild, it might have been a combination of wild fish and hatchery fish, but 250,000 sockeye died, and it had a large part to do with climate change and warming waters. These fish could not find cool enough waters, and the dams facilitate or play a role in these waters heating up because they're not free-flowing rivers anymore. They're just stagnant waters that absorb more heat, and they can be really lethal on fish.
Yeah, sort of unprecedented, the water temperatures this year in the Columbian Snake River system, right?
Record-breaking. Temperatures, I think, were regularly in the 70 degrees, and I believe the temperature, the maximum temperature for salmon survival is about 62, 63 degrees. So incredibly alarming temperatures, and that's a big reason why we're trying to push breaching these dams now is because climate change is only going to exacerbate, and that water is probably only going to get warmer, and that's bad news for salmon.
Okay, so breaching the dams would cool things off. So why do the orcas like the fall Chinook in particular?
Great question. They're the fattiest of the salmon.
Okay.
One of the fire restrictions lifted Friday included a Forest Service restriction on using the Salmon River Road east of Riggins. The road had been closed for nearly a month due to the Teepee Springs fire, which started in the Payette National Forest and jumped the Salmon River into the Nez Perce Clearwater Forest. The Idaho Fish and Game Department also lifted fire restrictions on its management land in the Clearwater region. State Forester David Groeschel said late last week it cost $67 million to fight fires on state lands this year. That's up more than $7 million from a previous estimate for Idaho this month. Groeschel said the most costly fire for the state was the Clearwater Complex, which cost $27 million to fight. That represents the total amount of money set aside by state lawmakers to fight fires this year. Groeschel said $16.7 million out of the $67 million will be paid by other agencies, leaving the state's firefighting bill at $50.3 million. The Clearwater Complex destroyed 48 homes and 70 outbuildings and resulted in one death. The settlers' ancient cedar grove north of Wallace will be closed all winter due to damage from the Grizzly Complex fire. The low-burning fire scorched the root system of the cedars, some of which were mature in the year 1500. Panhandle National Forest managers believe the grove is dangerous for humans now because some of the weakened giant trees may fall. They will reassess the situation in the spring after winter snows have time to knock down trees with compromised root systems. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals late last week ruled Idaho's anti-union law, which bans unions from using their funds to sweeten contract bids, is unconstitutional. The law was passed in 2011 but never took effect due to an injunction in a lawsuit brought by Idaho labor unions. The decision by the three-judge panel was unanimous. At the time of its passage, the Idaho Attorney General's office said the law would likely be overturned because it violates the National Labor Relations Act. Writing for the judicial panel, Judge Marcia Berzon wrote, "Construction unions have developed such programs to increase their members' access to work and stem the long-term decline in the percentage of construction workers represented by unions. Under such programs, a union collects funds from workers it represents and then uses those funds to subsidize bids by union contractors, allowing the contractors to lower their labor costs and so more effectively compete with non-union contractors. It is well settled that most of the conduct prohibited by Idaho's statute is protected by the NLRA. That was a quote from Judge Marsha Berzon's decision. The Moscow City Council tonight will be asked to approve a $124,000 cost mitigation proposal for Leyte Sanitation stemming from the city's rejection of roll carts, which arrived for the new single-stream recycling program. The city rejected the roll carts because they were too similar in color to roll carts currently used for solid waste collection. Leyte Sanitation had already paid for the roll carts. The company has agreed to try to sell the wrong color carts to another entity and reimburse the city with 70% of any cost recovery from such sales. The council will also be asked to adopt conceptual designs for two new parks. One is the 0.8-acre Itani Park, located near the intersection of Rolling Hills Drive and Itani Drive. The other is for the 1.02-acre Indian Hills Park, located on the northeastern corner of Indian Hills Drive and Blaine Street. Both park designs came from collaborative neighborhood workshops, which used the expertise of Bernardo Wills Architects. The two conceptual park designs will be addressed in separate agenda items. The City Council will also hear a fire department report from Fire Chief Brian Nickerson. The council will also adjourn to executive session after the meeting and will not reconvene. The Moscow City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at Moscow City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be mostly clear through Thursday, with highs around 71 tomorrow and Wednesday, 77 on Thursday, lows in the mid-40s. Currently at the Pullman-Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 69 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves.